Good morning. I want to talk to you guys today about Matthew, and we're going to be looking at one particular verse and understanding all of what's going on here. I want to tell you the story of how people sink so low as to become tax collectors as well. And yes, this is very high certainty of accuracy that this is how Jews who hate tax collectors sadly still end up becoming tax collectors. This has become one that I feel like I'm going to say this maybe every week, is this becoming one of my favorite apostles to talk about. So we'll see. A few years ago, a wife of a preacher bought a white love seat to go in the room with the house with the white carpet. I should tell you, they didn't put the white carpet in. It was the lovely decision of the childless couple that occupied the residence prior to them. And the wife justified buying the white love seat because it was so cheap, it would be bad stewardship if they did not. So they had a white couch on a white carpet, and his wife laid down the law that made sure the kids knew, you're not supposed to be in the white room. It seemed to be working fine until one day his wife straightened up that room and she discovered a secret that someone had been keeping. She had flipped over a cushion, and on the couch cushion there was a stain. She called in her husband into the room and showed him the pink fingernail polish and blotched on the white cushions. And she wasn't happy. So they called in their girls into the room, and Mom had the cushion flipped back over so that you couldn't see it, the stain. And so the interrogation began. But as the dad went towards the cushion couch to flip it over and expose it, the middle child, Morgan, cracked. She ran upstairs. Most of us are hiding some stain. Our worst fear is that someone will flip over the cushion and discover what we've been hiding. But because Jesus knows our stains, we think that disqualifies us. Surely our stains get our names scratched off of the books of heaven, really, the invitation to follow Christ, right? He wouldn't want us at all. If any of Jesus' closest followers knew that and felt that, it was Matthew. When we're first introduced to Matthew, he had stopped trying long ago to hide his stains. They were significant enough that it is highly probable that his family and friends had written him off. At the very least, he was a massive disappointment to his parents. They had much different plans for their sons, and we can see this because of the second name that they gave Matthew being Levi. To be given that name meant that your parents expected something of you, in this case, expected to serve the Lord as the Levites did with the Old Testament. From birth, he was expected to do great things, and he was set aside as a spiritual leader for the nation of Israel. At least that's what his parents wanted him to do. Matthew's father, grandfather, and probably great-grandfather were likely very much people that served the Lord, and so they thought it's just going to be continuing with our legacy. By age 12, Matthew would have had the first five books of the Bible memorized. It's likely that Matthew tried to become a disciple of one of the rabbis, but if he sent in his application, it was turned down. He didn't make the cut. Matthew had flunked out of rabbi school, as it were. He couldn't measure up, but whatever happened, we know that something definitely went wrong. Instead of serving the Lord, he decided to serve himself. He turned his back on his own people and became a tax collector to the Roman government. Essentially, his job description was to unfairly take money from his people and give it to the occupying Romans. Even if he collected taxes fairly, he was working for the enemy. But in those days, fair tax collectors did not exist, really. There was no such thing as an honest tax collector. They would cheat people to line their own pockets. It was a lucrative business. You could have a lot of things being a tax collector. As a tax collector, they were seen as religious and social outcasts to the Jews. He was ceremonially unclean. He wasn't even allowed to come to the outer court of the tabernacle. He was considered so bad off. His name had been scratched off the membership of the Jews because of becoming a tax collector. And you and me, we have a lot in common with Matthew. Maybe you're not stealing money from your neighbors, but we've all become disappointments at some point in our life. We haven't measured up. We haven't made the cut. The Bible says in Romans 2 that all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We've said things we shouldn't have said. We've done things we wish we wouldn't have done. And as hard as we have scrubbed the stains, they won't come out. I can't help but wonder if in an attempt to ignore his sins, this is why Matthew sought to become a tax collector. That can happen with poor choices, right? One bad choice deserves another, and one mistake snowballs into the next, and eventually you think, what's the point? Why try anymore? Whatever Matthew's past, he had reached a point where he was no longer even trying to hide it. Every day, Matthew sat at his tax collector's booth on a busy street. And as a boy, he had never imagined that his life would come to this low. Maybe late at night, he stared at the ceiling and had his thoughts full of guilt and regret of why he had come to this finally. If only he could start over and do things differently. But how is that even possible? How could he do that now? His stains were set and they were not coming out. Just before the dad flipped over the cushion, Morgan turned and ran. She headed upstairs and hid, and the father went to find her. He called her name a few times and she didn't answer. He began to check the rooms and eventually found her in her closet with her head buried between her knees. He could hear her crying. She didn't want to look up. He got down in the closet with her and put his arm around her. He wondered what she thought his response was going to be. Did she think he was going to get angry? Did she think he was going to yell? Finally, they both went downstairs together, and she told Mom and Dad what happened. She let out the secret that she'd been keeping for months now. She had spilled the fingernail polish, and then she tried to clean it up. She scrubbed and she scrubbed, but the stain just got worse. Eventually, she flipped the cushion over to hide what she had done. She said she had felt sick to her stomach every time her parents were in that room, thinking this is the time they're going to find out. She was scared to death that they would find out. And then she asked a question that melted her parents. She looked up with her big brown eyes full of tears and said, "Do you still love me?" My guess is Matthew no longer asked that question. He couldn't imagine that God still wanted him. I'm sure Matthew had heard about a new rabbi that had come on the scene. His name was Jesus, and he was doing things differently. And then one day, Matthew is at his tax collector's booth, and Jesus stops by to speak to him. And no one could have predicted what Jesus would say. There's only two words, but these two words changed everything for Matthew. Jesus said, "Follow me." A Jewish rabbi asking a tax collector for the Roman oppressors to be one of his followers. It's hard to overstate how unthinkable that scenario would have been. It's important to understand what it meant in the culture for Jesus to be a rabbi. He may have been homeless, unconventional as a rabbi. Being homeless was actually a bit of a norm for rabbis, but he was a rabbi nonetheless. And a rabbi was a teacher of God's word, which at the time was the Old Testament. Rabbis had extensive knowledge of the Torah, that is, the first five books of the Bible, and the prophets, making up the Old Testament. Rabbis were also special because they had a group of Talmudim, that is, their students or their disciples. So essentially, every rabbi had a class of students, and this was incredibly an exclusive group. You had to know your stuff very well to be admitted into this. Most people didn't end up as rabbis, and what they would do after that is they would take up the family business, whatever that may have been. There were hefty prerequisites for before you became a Talmudim, a student of a rabbi. These were the equivalents of a GPA and transcripts, prerequisites for getting into an elite college or academy. If you wanted to go to Harvard, you better have a 4.0 or a 36 on your ACT or a 2400 on your SAT score. In other words, you had to have a perfect score. Without these kinds of statistics, you probably weren't going to make it. And the same goes for the Talmudim applying to join a rabbi. The Talmudim had an impressive knowledge of Scripture, had to have one. And a rabbi would quiz them on the prospective books, really. They'd test them. They'd ask them to recite an entire book Or they might ask a question like, what is the number of times the name of the Lord was used in Leviticus? They would ask them these type of questions, and that student had to know the answers before being admitted. The selection was an intense, painstaking process, but the rabbis had to be thorough because the excellence of the students reflected on the excellence of the teacher. The teacher was known for his students. If the rabbi just let in anyone, it would be clear that he was not a sought-after teacher. On the other hand, if a rabbi of the Talmudim's group were an especially brilliant and elite group, the rabbi would be respected and admired as a good rabbi. So the rabbis would take applications for followers. But that's not how Rabbi Jesus went about doing his work, getting his followers. Instead of followers applying, Jesus invited his followers. This approach of going to someone and asking them just wasn't done by rabbis. A rabbi wouldn't humble himself or extend himself in that way. A rabbi wouldn't risk rejection by a student. He would be the one doing the rejecting. But Jesus takes the initiative. It would have been shocking enough just to hear that Jesus allowed a tax collector into his group, let alone he invited a tax collector into his group. But Jesus actually extended the invitation. He said to Matthew, "Follow me." Anyone hearing this exchange would have been shocked. I'm sure the other disciples would have been offended. A tax collector? Why are you letting him into the group? He's not only a sinner, he sins for a living. Jesus finds Matthew hiding behind his tax collector's booth, and when Jesus comes by, Matthew expects a pointed finger and words of rejection, just like the other rabbis would have done to a tax collector. Instead, he finds open arms and a gracious invitation. So, Morgan asked, "Do you still love me?" Her mom knelt down beside her on the floor, and she whispered, "Morgan, you could never make a big enough stain that I wouldn't love you still." I wish I could tell you that they got the stain out of the couch, but that stain is still there, and it always will be for Morgan. But a funny thing happened. Morgan started telling the story of the stained white couch, and she would like to show people, "Here is the stain." Why? Why would she do that? Because the stain that once represented shame, guilt, and fear of rejection now represents love, grace, and acceptance. My parents love me even though I mess up. Do you know how we know about Matthew's past as a tax collector and the friends that he had? The prostitutes, drunkards, and thieves? The reason we know all that is because Matthew tells us. He takes us into the room and says, "Look at the stain, and God still forgave me." When Jesus invited Matthew to follow, he was making it clear that this was an invitation extended not solely to the religious elite, the morally upright, and those who have their lives all together, but to anyone. It's an invitation to all of us who are hiding our stains from the world. Jesus throws out the elitist application process and gives an open invitation to his disciples, and later he'll extend it to everyone who would believe in him. Have you ever been seen one of those car dealership commercials that advertise, "Anyone can buy a car"? But if you look closely, there's an asterisk next to the statement at the bottom of the screen, and it says WAC. Do you know what WAC means? It means with approved credit. That's what they mean by anyone. Anyone who meets the qualifications, anyone who meets the requirements of the approval process. When we read the word "anyone" in the invitation of Jesus, we can't help but think there must be an asterisk next to it. Even if there wasn't one when Jesus gave the invitation, it seems that over the years the church has placed one there next to his invitation. The sign out front says, "We welcome anyone and everyone," but if you look really close, you'll see an asterisk. And it turns out that anyone means people who appear to have their lives together, who don't have visible struggles. Anyone does not include those who struggle with addiction. Anyone does not include those who've gone through divorce. Anyone means people who dress appropriately. Anyone means those who meet certain social and economic background standards, who are affiliated with a certain political party, and have a certain taste in music even. I recently heard the following letter from a lady in a church who told about an experience she had on one particular weekend. Here's what she said. It was about 5 minutes before services were to start, and a young woman, probably late 20s, early 30s, with her 10-year-old son approached me with a deer-in-the-headlights look of, I don't know what I'm supposed to do while I'm here. She had never been there and was clearly anxious. I took her to the check-in counter for her son's classes to figure out where he was supposed to go, and on the way she told me that she had gotten divorced 6 years ago, and after that she no longer was welcome in the church that she attended. She hadn't been to church since then. She had given up. You could hear the guilt in her voice and the fear that she had there too. She was terribly nervous, and I shared with her that I had been divorced before. As a single mom, I knew how tough it was. Once her son was in class, I asked her if she wanted to sit with me in worship, and upon hearing the invitation, she asked, "Am I allowed to go inside there?" And she pointed to the sanctuary. "I'm not a member." I told her that she was, and when we got to our seats, the services had already started, and everyone had already was standing and singing. After the song, there was a prayer, and the first words out of the man's mouth were, "God, thank you that no matter where our path has taken us in life, you can redeem us and forgive us." With that, her tears started flowing and really didn't stop for the remainder of the service. I could just feel the fear and guilt melt away as the services progressed. At the end of the service, the preacher offered an invitation and asked, "Anyone who wants to talk more about surrendering his or her life to Christ, come forward to the front and talk with me." Then we stood for the closing worship song. Towards the end of the first song, she seemed to be antsy, and I assumed that she was ready to leave and go pick up her son. I turned to ask her if she was ready to leave, but before I had the chance to open my mouth, she said, "Do I need to walk down there and talk with him if I want to make that decision?" I told her that would be a good place to start. She simply said, "I want to do that." I asked her if she wanted me to go with her, and she said, "Yes." So we walked down front, and here's where the preacher takes over. I greet her down front and could see the tears in her eyes. She leaned forward and whispered in my ear, "I don't know if I'm allowed to respond to the invitation. I went through a divorce a number of years ago, and my old church wouldn't have me." She was stopped at the gate and told she didn't meet the right qualifications to be a Christian. The cushion got flipped, and someone decided her stain was too big. Jesus has invited anyone to follow him, but when they come to church, they find that there is an asterisk there. The not-so-subtle message of, "We have to let you in because Jesus said so, but we're going to keep an eye on you." I can't help but wonder how the other disciples must have felt when Jesus invited Matthew. What about his qualifications? What about his past history? Jesus, certainly you can't mean you want him to be a part of your group. But when Jesus says anyone, it turns out he really meant anyone. So here Matthew sits at his tax collector's booth, mulling over this rabbi's decision. There's no doubt Matthew knew what this invitation involved. He understood that it meant giving up everything. He received an invitation, but there's no way that he could respond to it and stay the same way. Saying yes to following Jesus would mean saying no to his lucrative business that he has established. Anyone could follow, but not without giving up everything. Jesus says in Matthew 9:9, "Follow me." And the text ends by saying, "And Matthew got up and followed him." Tradition says that he ministered to the Jews both in Israel and abroad for many years before being martyred for his faith. There's no certain record of how Matthew died, but the tradition says that he was burned at the stake. And thus the man who walked away from a lucrative career without giving it a second thought was willing to say, "I will die for this cause because it's worth it." He was willing to make that sacrifice because that was what it was all about to him. He discovered the truth. These days, people don't know Matthew as a failure and embarrassment who sold his soul for a Roman's job, to the Romans for a job. We know Matthew as a follower of Christ, wrote the first book of the New Testament. It's important to understand that the grace that God doesn't simply invite us to follow. He teaches us to follow through reading His Word, through prayer, through the environment that He created, the church. We learn how to follow Christ. Just because Matthew left his past behind didn't mean that he started out things perfect from then on. Far from it. Even after we decide to follow Jesus, we continue to need His grace for the journey. There are plenty of days where, truthfully, I find myself being a fan instead of a follower of Christ. But each morning I receive the same grace-filled invitation that Jesus gave Matthew of, follow me. Each day we've got to make that decision of saying, I'm going to continue to follow Christ. So, who's invited to follow Jesus? Anyone. Sexual past? Anyone. Ex-con? Anyone. Current con? Anyone. Recently divorced? Anyone. Republican, Democrat? Anyone. Alcoholic, pothead, addict? Anyone. Hypocrite? Anyone. I wonder if you've had a moment like Morgan or a moment like Matthew. The cushion gets flipped up, the stain is exposed, you're guilty, and you know what you deserve. You know what's coming. But the words of Jesus are full of grace. He says, follow me. You think, there must be a mistake. He doesn't know who I am. He doesn't know what I've done. Yeah, He does. He knows about the stain. In fact, He died on the cross so that our stains could be washed away. White as snow, actually. And because of His grace, we find ourselves at the same crossroads as Matthew. The invitation of Jesus to follow Him begins with, if anyone. Turns out anyone means anyone. Anyone means me. Anyone means you. The invitation goes out to anyone can follow Christ. Maybe you've fallen off the beaten track like Matthew of saying, I can't do it anymore. I've done too many bad things. Jesus says no. The invitation is for you. The invitation is for anyone who hasn't heard it before. You have the opportunity to come forward here at this next song and tell me what the problem is, and we'll gather around you as the family of God and pray for you. And if you need to be baptized in the waters of baptism into Jesus' life, please come forward as we stand and sing.